Welcome to This Week in Pathology. This week we're covering 10 notable papers spanning molecular biomarker interpretation and its reproducibility, classification updates in soft tissue, skin and gastrointestinal pathology, and the recurring theme of how morphology and genomics inform each other. Let's dive in. We start with liquid biopsy, where the European Society of Pathology has published an expert opinion paper in Virchow's archive, staking out pathology's claim to blood-based genomic testing. Fusco and colleagues are explicit that tissue remains the cornerstone of diagnosis, but circulating tumor DNA offers a repeatable, minimally invasive source of tumor genomic information when tissue is unavailable, insufficient, outdated, or unlikely to capture heterogeneity. They walk through two implementation models. In advanced non-small cell lung cancer, plasma testing allows rapid detection of actionable alterations and identification of acquired resistance at progression, but tissue remains essential for histological classification, PD-L1 assessment, recognizing histologic transformation, and evaluating the tumor microenvironment. In metastatic breast cancer, liquid biopsy has become central to dynamic molecular management of hormone-dependent disease. The practical message for laboratories is about infrastructure rather than novelty. Assay selection, awareness of clonal hematopoiesis as a confounder, attention to tumor fraction and variant allele fraction, and quality assurance. The Society flags marked inequity in access across Europe and argues that molecular biologists and bioinformaticians now belong inside the pathology laboratory, not adjacent to it. The second theme is one every practicing pathologist will recognize: the reproducibility of biomarker scoring when therapy hinges on faint staining. Also in Virchow's archive, Hirsutoglu and colleagues tackled the HER2 null, ultra-low and low categories in 125 treatment-naive invasive breast carcinoma excisions, each read in two separate topographical blocks, plus 78 matched core biopsies and 58 lymph node metastases, scored independently by two blinded pathologists using the 4B5 antibody. Agreement between pathologists was substantial across specimen types, but agreement between two blocks of the same tumor was only moderate. Spatial heterogeneity, not just observer subjectivity, is driving the discrepancies. Concordance between the final excision status and the core biopsy was substantial, but concordance with nodal metastases was only moderate, largely because expression falls off in nodes. Of 22 ultra-low primaries, 15 reverted to null in the corresponding metastasis. HER2 tier showed no independent relationship with overall survival. Their pragmatic recommendation is to examine a second tumor block and obtain a second pathologist confirmation for ultra-low cases. Sitting alongside this, Modern Pathology reports the largest cohort to date of HER2-positive salivary duct carcinoma, treated with trastuzumab plus docetaxel, 98 patients studied by Utsuni and colleagues. Using the 2023 ASCO CAP definition, intratumoral heterogeneity was found in about 1 in 9 cases, and only ever in resected primary tumors. In every heterogeneous case, the matched metastases were homogeneous, and usually HER2 positive. Immunohistochemistry and dual color in situ hybridization agreed closely, with one sarcomatoid exception. The objective response rate was about 81%. With median progression-free survival close to 10 months and median overall survival just under 4 years. Critically, neither heterogeneity nor the degree of amplification predicted response, a contrast with breast and gastric cancer. The clinical implication is that finding a heterogeneous HER2 pattern in a salivary duct carcinoma primary should not be used to withhold HER2-targeted therapy. Our third theme is classification, where criteria are being revised, validated, or defended. In the American Journal of Surgical Pathology, Len Giel and colleagues assembled the largest series of vulvar smooth muscle tumors to date, 35 cases with follow-up in 30 patients over a median of just over 5 years, and compared three competing schemes, the 1979 and 1996 site-specific vulvar criteria and the uterine criteria. Most tumors presented as a painless mass in premenopausal patients, and the three systems agreed in 80% of cases. The disagreements are instructive. Several tumors that the uterine criteria called smooth muscle tumors of uncertain malignant potential were labeled leiomyosarcoma by the vulvar criteria, while two tumors with tumor cell necrosis and brisk mitoses but small size and circumscribed borders were called leiomyosarcoma by uterine criteria and benign leiomyoma by both site-specific systems. Overall, the data support using the uterine criteria at this site, with the caveat that the uncertain malignant potential category still needs further study. Staying with the same journal, Zhang and colleagues addressed a problem that generates real diagnostic anxiety, the diverted rectum. In a blinded rectum-exclusive comparison of 63 diverted rectal resections, 17 without inflammatory bowel disease, and 46 with, graded across 5 histologic domains, de novo diversion colitis was uncommon in the non-inflammatory bowel disease group, occurring in about 1 in 6 specimens, with most of those cases showing only diversion change. By contrast, 43 of 46 inflammatory bowel disease cases showed a chronic colitis pattern and scored higher across all 5 parameters, and prediversion distal margin involvement was frequent. Ulcerative colitis specimens were more severely affected than Crohn's disease. The authors argue that in most cases, persistent inflammatory bowel disease, not severe diversion colitis, is the better interpretation, and they propose a 3-tier reporting vocabulary after clinicopathological correlation, diversion change, diversion colitis, and inflammatory bowel disease, with superimposed diversion changes. 2 reviews round out this theme. Histopathology carries an update on cutaneous lymphoma from Kempf and Middeldorf, tracking the 5th edition WHO classifications and the international consensus classification, including the promotion of several formerly provisional entities and the renaming of primary cutaneous CD8-positive acral T-cell lymphoma to a lymphoproliferative disorder on the strength of its excellent prognosis. A reminder that nomenclature drives treatment intensity and patient counseling. And in Virchow's archive, Holm and colleagues review duodenal and ampullary tumors, emphasizing that assigning origin depends on locating the tumor center and therefore on meticulous grossing, that lineage-specific antibody panels help subtype ampullary carcinomas and guide chemotherapy choice, and that routine molecular profiling for predictive biomarkers is now warranted. Finally, 3 papers illustrate morphology and immunohistochemistry as gatekeepers to molecular information. Human Pathology offers a review from Anderson Kaleha and colleagues on the morphologic correlates of genetically defined acute myeloid leukemia subtypes, making the case that reproducible bone marrow and blood findings can raise early genetic suspicion, guide triage of ancillary testing, and anticipate biologic behavior before cytogenetics returns. In Modern Pathology, Kasajima and colleagues characterized 199 resected pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors and found that about 1 in 10 narrowed the intrapancreatic bile duct. These lesions were exclusively non-functioning, more common in women, had higher Ki-67 indices, and when involving the lower periampullary bile duct, shorter progression-free survival. Nearly all expressed PDX1, most lower duct lesions expressed CDX2, and gastrin and somatostatin expression was common, while insulin and glucagon were absent, a profile resembling duodenal neuroendocrine tumors and periampullary glands, rather than conventional pancreatic tumors, suggesting a non-islet origin. Also in Modern Pathology, she and colleagues examined albumin messenger RNA in situ hybridization across 63 cholangiocarcinomas and 157 tumors of other origins. Nearly all cholangiocarcinomas carrying FGFR fusions or IDH1 and IDH2 mutations, the alterations with approved targeted therapies showed strong albumin positivity, whereas tumors with BAP1, ARID1A, or PBRM1 alterations were less often positive and stained more weakly. That raises the possibility of using a widely available in situ hybridization assay to help flag which liver tumors are most likely to harbor an actionable target. If you only have time for one paper this week, make it the HER2 reproducibility study in Virchow's archive. Ultra-low HER2 now determines eligibility for antibody-drug conjugate therapy, and this paper gives you 2 concrete, immediately actionable steps, a second block and a second reader, to reduce the misclassification that decides who gets treated. Here are the key takeaways from this week in pathology. First, minimal HER2 expression is unstable across tumor blocks and drops off in nodal metastases, so score a second block and get a second opinion on ultra-low cases. Second, in salivary duct carcinoma, HER2 heterogeneity in the primary does not predict failure of trastuzumab-based therapy and should not be used to deny treatment. Third, the European Society of Pathology positions circulating tumor DNA as an extension of the pathologist's role, with tissue still required for classification, PD-L1, transformation, and microenvironment assessment. Fourth, for vulvar smooth muscle tumors, the uterine criteria outperform the older site-specific systems. Fifth, in a diverted rectum with known inflammatory bowel disease, chronic active colitis usually means persistent disease rather than diversion colitis, and report it using explicit, context-aware terminology. And finally, albumin in situ hybridization may help identify cholangiocarcinomas most likely to carry FGFR or IDH alterations, where molecular testing is not readily available. That's your roundup for this week in pathology. The full transcript and references are available on the episode page in your Audio Scholar library. This is an AI-curated summary. For clinical decisions, always consult primary sources and current guidelines. See you next week. If this weekly briefing is useful, follow the show in your podcast app so new episodes arrive automatically. And think of one colleague, in any specialty, who never has time to keep up with the literature. Tell them about Audio Scholar, a free 10-minute weekly for every specialty, to listen to in any podcast app, or to read at audioscholar.cc. This is an automated summary generated by artificial intelligence, which can make mistakes. Always review the original source materials.